say our opening prayer. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Beloved David.
Beloved David.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Oh, oh, peace, bliss. Amen. Just do a short meditation here. What a voice he has, Andrea Bocelli. Wonderful. Jill, I think it's right that you do this part on page 94. Beginning of chapter 9.
Then answered the Jews and said unto him, What sign showest thou unto us, seeing that thou dost these things? Jesus answered and said unto them, Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then said the Jews, 46 years was this temple in building, and wilt thou rear it up in 3 days? But he spake of the temple of his body. John 2:18-21. The Christ entombed, chapter 9. The three bodily jars. We are not the body. We are in truth pure spirit, clothed with a body, and we have all of these encumbrances that we must get rid of. We have three bodily jars, and we must open the cork and let the spirit out of each of these jars. Master many times used the example of taking some ocean water and putting it first in a smaller jar and corking it up, and then putting that jar in a larger one that would hold it and corking that up, and then putting it still in a third jar, pouring the water in and corking that up. So you have the same ocean, which could be likened unto spirit, in these three jars with the corks on them. But the part of the ocean that is in the bottle cannot be released and mingled with the ocean and feel itself a part of that ocean until you remove the three corks. After you go through the first experience of releasing the consciousness from the gross or the physical body, there is still more to be gone through. There are other steps above, you see. You see, it is not like we think. It isn't just a few steps up to here, then the tremendous crucifixion, and then after that crucifixion, the resurrection and the ascension. Because this resurrection takes place in three different periods, even as it was given in the Bible. Christ is entombed in the heart. It is said that Jesus descended into hell, and on the third day he arose from the dead. The 3 days is symbolic because it is referring to three separate experiences, three separate spaces of time which the soul has to go through because there are three sheaths or three bodies. It is said in the higher scriptures that this is the experience which every man goes through when he comes to the last mile of the spiritual evolution, and when his consciousness must be released from each one of these three bodily jars. When we go through this experience, it is not just a day, but a period of time. And that period of time depends on the karmic pattern of our past lives and of this life. Sometimes it is a shorter period and sometimes a longer period. But in this testing period, you unfold just like a flower spreads its petals to the sun. You need not worry about any of these things, but just to keep your attention upon God. As this change within you takes place, there is a chemical change in all of your body, because all of the spinal centers are embedded in the heart center. All of the petals of the lotus, there are petals in each spinal center, are embedded in the heart center. They have their seat there because this heart center is the middle center or the fourth center. It is that center between Egypt and Jerusalem in yourself, where the Battle of Armageddon is fought. This is the neutral center. These petals must open and these spinal centers must be opened in order that you can have this tremendous light of God. Each one of these spinal centers has to do with one part of your body. The bottom one is the coccygeal center, which has to do with creative force within yourself. And the wonder of it is that a man and a woman coming together can create a human being. But the Spirit of God, they don't create. And they themselves don't create. They come together. The spermatozoa and the ovum join, and it becomes the one cell. That is called the Father Abraham. And then this explains all of the begats. Abraham begat, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on, until the 14th generation. Then again, it starts a second line of begats, until the 14th generation. Then it tells about a third line of begats, and the same thing happens exactly until the 14th generation. Now, exactly what does that mean? It means that this one cell, which happens and is planted in the mother's womb in the beginning, branches out and grows and creates all of the other cells, all of the organs, everything in the body. But the soul is encased by three bodily jars. First, it is a seed, and then it becomes an idea body. It is an idea of God, shall we say. And it is the first cause. So it is called a causal body. Then, because it says that they begat this until the 14th generation, we have seven spinal centers with negative and positive electrical currents in each one of the spinal centers. And so the vertebrae of the children is, of the child is born. Now the second line of begats creates the astral or the electrical body, which governs and controls the nervous system. Again, we are told that this happens until the 14th generation. So this particular body is hooked onto the spine with the seven spinal centers with the positive and negative currents in them. Then again, we have the third one, which is the gross or the physical body. And finally, we say that this is my body, and yet we are dwelling in three bodies. Just as a soul occurs, this human form in an idea form first, and it takes on a causal or an idea body, then an astral or electrical body, and then a physical or gross body, coming from one cell into the outer full expression as the body containing the spirit, it has to be released in the same way. And what is released? It is the consciousness which is released from each one of these bodily jars or these sheaths in which we live. This is quite an experience, and each experience is totally different. The first one is the most difficult because it has to do with these human senses.
Let's stop there.
Yeah, I was feeling that too. Sorry.
Yeah, I could tell you where I usually pause. But my mic was turned off. Well, you know, so we all have comments probably, but it's quite amazing, isn't it, that John has this, John is very much, the more Gnostic sounding of all the Gospels. But he says, but he spake of the temple of his body. Isn't that interesting that we have, Mother talks about the temple not made with hands and things like that too. There's all through the Bible, if they would just look, the temple, they talk about the church. And why wouldn't the church be the same as the temple? In the terminology is so similar. But I love this example that Master used to give of what a brilliant teacher he was. It's really wonderful. And then the final thing, just to begin with, and please, anyone else, you're welcome to step in, but I think Mother's the only person I've ever read or heard talk about each of the censures being rooted, she called it embedded, in the heart center. That's really, really interesting. I remember when I read this, it's funny how each time you go through it, you think you get one little interesting thing and then you forget about it and go on to the next. So it's very strange.
Where's that? And does that mean the higher and the lower centers?
That's what she said.
She said it's the neutral. She said it was neutral.
The heart center is the neutral one, but then she said, didn't she just say all the centers are embedded in the heart center?
I believe so, yeah.
Both the ones above it and the ones below it. I have a question for any of you who've read Master's work a lot. Is the only time I've heard about Master talking about these three bodily jars is from Mother, and I haven't done extensive reading with Master, but has anybody else heard him mention the three bodily jars?
Yeah, good point.
No, it's in the lessons.
Is it?
Is it? Do you remember which lesson?
No, it's
It's not in the autobiography, is it? Yeah.
I don't recall it.
Let's see if I can find out for you the lessons. I just have the SRF ones, but which lessons? Jill, have you seen it in?
It doesn't jump out at me, but I can look. I can, because I have a Word doc with all of it. So it.
Some of these esoteric things are also covered in Master. I put added footnotes to each printing too, so some of it might be in that in the, one of the later autobiographies too.
Or the earlier. I mean, the earlier
could have been taken out.
Too might be.
Mm-hmm. And it might be in some of Master's talks. We don't have that many of Master's talks.
The other thing I was wondering about was in Second Coming or one of the other or the Bhagavad, the Gita books. I don't know.
I don't remember it, but doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many places it could be.
And who else speaks of the Bhagats in that way? That's the thing that's interesting about Mother is she mixes. And shows the connections between the Christian teachings that are implicitly there, and we don't know anything about the Hindu teachings that do explain. They are all the keys to so many things. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kundalini and crucifixion.
What comes up for you around the 46 years? Because that's not 14 times 3 or anything. The number 46, the 46 years.
Where do you get that?
The temple was stood for 46 years.
Yeah.
It took 46 years to build the temple.
Yeah,
and he was going to rebuild in 3 days.
So the Jews. In building, was this temple.
It took 46 years to build.
Yeah.
And then Christ was going to rebuild it in 3 days.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, 46 could have been just, we never know exactly when they're just adding history. I mean, they use the name Herod. Herod was an actual person. So there are some things that are just based on truth. And by the way, they knew the dates of the temple because Herod the Great is the one who built it. So he was still on everyone's mind at that time, even though he had died around.
Your question, Jill, is it a symbolic number?
Yeah, I was wondering if it's a symbolic number.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like 46.
Talking about 40 the other day a lot. Talking about 40 a lot the other day.
Mm-hmm. Well, 40 and 6.
How about chromosomes? 23 chromosomes times 2. There's always both sides, you know, the rail. Well, I think the bodily jars is... very interesting kind of a way to look at things, and that we have to break out of them is explains kind of the, you know, it's rather than just a continuum, there are discrete events that occur. So the ability to get through a center and break out of that lower constraint. And how that affects, you know, it's funny how they have the notion of these three bodily jars, but when the spine, when the kundalini comes up the spine and goes through the fourth center, then that's symbolic of, or it is showing getting out of the physical body. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing is true that the lower chakras are the things that are needed for the body to run the body. coccyx center, the second center is, let's see, is that will? I think the second center is will. Do you know?
Survival, isn't it? Or is that the first?
The coccyx.
Will is the third. Yeah.
Where is the third, isn't it? Will is the third. So second is the survival of the person.
First is survival. Second is sexual reproduction.
She said that sexual is on the coccyx. Kate and I were talking about this the other day, thinking this
the
confusion
bottom
that
one,
I had.
The bottom one is the coccygeal center, which has to do with the creative force within yourself. Mm-hmm.
And she says elsewhere. I actually had that wrong, so I actually looked that up about a year ago. But the second one is the – so David and I always – that's right. I remember how it was. The first one is the preservation of the species. The second is the preservation of the self. Mm-hmm. And the third is the use of will. And will also has the higher aspects of the mind too, because – the mind works on the external world, and that's the material scientists that would be there. So when you break,
I was just going to say, for some reason, the word creativity comes to me for the second center. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that was in my head, but mm-hmm. survival and sex is creativity. So I don't know.
The creative force, Mother called it there, didn't she?
Yeah. Mother's talking about that as the first chakra.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah, that the creative force, which is the sexual force as well, is the first center.
But when Peter talks about the second energy center being preservation of self, it's the creativity with which we make that presentation of ourselves in the world. I think that was how David explained it to me. Mm-hmm. First being the sexuality or the begatting, the creating. But then how do we present ourselves? Do we take that first chakra and use that as the delivery method to the world? That's who we are as a sexual being. Or are we somebody who is prone to be a bully or a tyrant, or are we soft natured? I think that was how David would explain it to me one time.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah. And these are different than what I've heard of in more in the kind of traditional, like the first one is elimination, one is, and these sound different to me. What Mother's saying sounds different than, like if you go to a yoga class and they tell you what each chakra is.
Yeah.
That's more from a health perspective, perhaps, or from Patanjali's. You know.
Well, the nerves actually come out of these areas, and they go to specific places on the body. So that makes sense that you could look at it that way, and it would be perfectly correct to do so.
And of course, the Chinese have that all too, don't they? They have the different things connected with
the meridians,
kidneys, and the liver, and.
But so my point was earlier, though, that it's interesting that breaking, so we think of it linearly as coming up the spine and breaking through there is what uncorks the bottle. When you break through the heart center, it uncorks the bottle. Isn't that interesting? That the physical body is all contained by virtue of the chakras description anyway, is all contained below that. And implicitly, because when you're able to move easily through the first three, I mean, that's really just being a human being, the first three. However, when the kundalini comes up those things, you have a response because now the new body's being made. But you're already functioning in those lower chakras just to be a normal human being.
I loved that too, about that all those spinal centers are embedded in the heart center. I'd never heard that before. What came to mind was something else that Mother once said, that love is the key that unlocks the door to the kingdom of heaven. And what Mother said to David that time, he used to tell the story that she said, unless you love completely, you cannot have God. And I know there's a lot more than with a heart center than just love, that these three bodies are tied together at the heart center and all the spinal centers embedded have their qualities embedded in the heart center. But what I was thinking of was that love is, you cannot have God without love. You can have mastery over those lower chakras. Yeah. You can have mastery of will. You can have mastery of truth and right understanding. You can have so much, but unless you have that love, you can't unlock, you can't release your consciousness from all those bodies where they're embedded and tied at the heart center without love.
So let me
that thing that uncorks it, isn't it? The key or the
yeah, the undoing of the Gordian knot. Yeah. Well,
that's the other thing, isn't it? Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
The Gordian
knot. Is that key. Or that slashing through the Gordian knot, or the taking out of the piece that released it, however it actually went.
Mm-hmm. Popping it.
Yeah, yeah, but then it all unleashed and loosed the whatever was trapped and stuck.
Mother said that it really was a snapping sound. It was just like a cracking sound for her.
Or and she says it's the popping of the cork, maybe. They, mm-hmm.
Like and she says it's different for each one of us.
Mm, yeah.
You said that twice, I think, in this.
Mm.
And think how hard that can be for so many people who are so tied up in the preservation of self and will and survival, especially if there's been an experience of trauma or hurt from you know, love that didn't go right or something. And then to trust enough, to love enough, to let that, to remove that key. To loose the knot, that's a big one. There's a lot going on in this heart center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and now we know why, because it's all.
Yeah, it's another element of description for the heart center, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other odd thing is that we have to remember that the astral body also has six centers. So it is confusing.
Six centers or seven?
Well, there'd be seven, wouldn't there be? But I'm saying, you know, in terms of to be a man, the number 666 has to do with the three bodily jars, each having a sixth center that makes you that's the number of the beast, which is really kind of harsh on us poor humans to think of ourselves that way. But it is instead something we observe, isn't it? We find that beast within us sometimes. And we do know it does exist.
I flashed today on something Mother said. You know how thoughts just are coming through. And this one was when Mother said, it's interesting that the word evil backwards is live mm-hmm. and the word devil backwards is lived.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's really, really interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Mother used that a lot, in fact. Mm-hmm. She talked about that a lot. Well, now let's think about what is it about love. So I would reverse some of that logic and say that one of the experiences of these, so you're being exhorted to love more to bring this about, but rather, which is fine, but don't forget that when these experiences happen, that one of the things you can measure it by is the love that just pours from you.
So I always think about David's experience that he talks about up on Bellingham Hill.
Yes.
And I think that's what happened to him.
Yeah.
Because I think that knot in the heart center let loose. And he talks about that. And he talked about the tremendous pain.
Wanting to hug the rocks, he said.
Before it happened, you know, the tremendous pain and then snap and it.
Right.
The piece that is that longing for to have that love.
Yeah.
And that's the piece we can keep instead of trying to avoid love, trying to say we don't need it. It's to really have that longing that seems to to draw us to that center and.
But you see what you see.
And make it ripen. Make
you see
it ripen.
Why I like to turn the goals around, though, because when in some respects these things that we're being exhorted to try to attain ourselves. Or come for free once you have that state.
Yeah.
So you need both. You need that to push towards it, but you have to also recognize you really don't really have it until you gain it.
Yeah.
You don't, you really just hope for it and you.
You should be a good person, but you can do no real good until you have your God realization.
That's another way of saying it, isn't it?
You practice it, don't you? The love your neighbor. You practice that.
Well, love implies an attraction. So I would always say attraction to what?
I would say
it's the love of God. That's what draws you up. So you can have a love of sex. You can have a love of material things. You can have a love of doing violence to others. That's not going to get you to God.
Yeah.
I don't think that's love.
Real love. That's what I was going to say. It's not, especially.
I would say that's an attraction.
It's an attraction. It's definitely an attraction.
Which is different.
It has to be a love of God. That's what draws you up the spine.
So first chakra.
No, it's the heart chakra in desire for God.
No, that is. But I'm talking about the one you love doing violence to your neighbor. That's first chakra stuff.
That's misplaced.
Yeah, it is. My point is that it's love of what? Like love implies an attraction, right? So it's an attraction to what?
And I think
for spiritual development, it's an attraction to God, an attraction, a love of the divine, right?
And that's more. And I know we're getting into semantics, but.
So if you're in love with the girl next door, that's not really going to necessarily take you to God, right?
Right. But that's desire as opposed to love. And so.
No, don't you love your husband?
And I would say that's.
A little bit of a pause there, wasn't there?
Well, because with what we're speaking about, the truth of love is that it comes through you, not, you know, the love that we're talking about, the divine love, is not an act or an action. That's a state of being. And that's the difference.
What's an emotion?
I don't equate desire and love either. Like love to me is that peace and gratitude, and it's love is so much bigger than desire. I don't see it as the same, but I think, how there's in, you know, Greek terminology, there's all the different words for love. I think that's where we kind of are.
Friendship and
And so I'm not being very helpful.
We can misplace love too. We can have misplaced love. And you know, in the Science of Religion Master's book, he talks about that we want bliss. That's what we really want, but we misplace it a lot. And so in our lower levels, we love different things, and we really do. I mean, so in that sense, it is the means by which we feel attraction. We feel it is, you know, that love, when it wells up in us, does attract us to others. There's an attractive element there.
My point is that love is a great experience. Love is a great emotion. But what drives us to God is love of God.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And longing for God.
And that's the greatest gift you can give. You know, this is what Mother said Master gave her.
And until you had that experience, I suppose all those other loves or at least give you something.
Good practice.
So if you're still talking about my biggest love in life is chocolate, then, you know, at least you have that, I guess, you know. if you haven't had the experience of that kind of divine love, those are the loves you have, you know.
This is what separates us from the animals, right? So it's hard to find a greater love than maybe your dog has for you. You know, that's tremendous love and loyalty, right? But they don't have the higher chakras. They don't have the higher chakras, so they can't rise above that, above their heart. They don't possess them, is what we're told, right? Animals don't possess the higher chakras. they can be tremendous lovers. And they are. That's why we love our pets so much. They love us so much.
They love us.
But to be drawn up into the higher chakras, that's where that love takes us.
I appreciated what Larry said. Oh, sorry, Judy. Go ahead. Oh,
you can go. I'll go after you.
Okay. As long as you remember what it was.
There's the question.
I just wanted to say that it was what Larry said a little while ago that, you know, these things come for free and when you have these states. And what that made me think of was what Mother was describing, that the petals of the lotus are embedded in the heart. And as these centers open, then they're opening, those petals are unfolding at the heart center. It's not just as you open the third chakra, as you open that Christ center, it's not only happening here, but there are petals unfolding and opening also at the heart center for each of those centers and each of those experiences. And those petals unfolding one at a time, not necessarily in a big explosion, like, oh, now my second center is open all at once, but unfolding one petal at a time at the heart center. And as that unfoldment happens and opening at each center, there is more love, that experience of love. So it was like what Larry was saying, it's a state of being. Not in that aspiration, not in the sense of love for God as an aspiration. Although, as Jill said, that's where it starts. You have to have that aspiration and that longing. But it comes to you and it through you. And it is a state of love that is experienced at the heart center and radiates out through the whole, all the other centers as they open. Mm-hmm.
I'm noticing more and more that the least little thought of Mother, I feel that emotion instant. You know, it's like, there you go, you're going to cry. There you go, you're going to cry. What am I feeling, you know?
That's Shakti.
It's the divine love that's mm-hmm. just making itself known instantly with the thought of Mother. Mm-hmm. It's so wonderful. It's just so hard for me to understand. I don't even try. I'm just so mm-hmm. thankful. See what I mean? It just comes again. It's just instant. It's such a gift. Love is a gift, and it is flowing to us, through us, and it's awakening us to who we are eventually.
Love is flowing like a river out into the desert.
And that's what's amazing about Guru Shakti, is that it isn't just like a warm fuzzy here. It is the petals yeah. opening in each
it
chakra.
Does, yeah.
In
yeah.
each chakra, right from the bottom of your, as Mother expressed when meeting Master, from the base of the spine right up through.
And she said the soles of her feet, didn't she? So yeah. in that case, yeah.
So if that Guru Shakti is so powerful in that.
And that's a gift, isn't it? I love Mother saying that she couldn't have gone through what she went through without having, with Swami Ramdas, with Papa, without having been set aright and given the great gifts of love of God. From Master's teachings, that's what he gave her. He gave her the foundation that she could stand on. And it is a really tremendous gift, because it is, as Peter's saying, it's the gift, it's the thing that pulls you to God. That's the greatest, that's the true, it's the pure, let's do it my way, because I'm saying we have misplaced love sometimes, but the pure form is love of God. And that's what we find when we have formerly thought, well, it's this love, I need this, I want that. All those things you really do love. And look at even your spouse, you can love that person, but it isn't still anything but preparation for the greater love.
I do love Greg, just to be clear.
That,
my poor husband. My poor husband.
Get that on the record.
Put up with a lot.
This is being recorded. Thank you.
And you have
we all love Greg.
The guru awakens. The guru awakens that. You know, I think because when you both talk about the guru or you think about the guru together, that awakens that love for each other as well. You know, and that's
it awakens.
That's when it's the best kind.
When you've had a guru and you really experience her presence. That's the other thing that's kind of missing with these ideas of loving someone in history and loving Gandhi and all those things. And not denying that people can have a guru who's not in the body, but generally, you know, the idea of having a real guru, what the really great thing is you really do have something embedded in your consciousness that is, as Judy's saying, all she has to do is access it just to bring it to mind. And what is it?
I was just thinking the other day, you know, I miss my grandmother and I loved my grandmother, but I think when we were talking yesterday at the grave site and just thinking of how accessible mother still is, how you can remember, you know, maybe not every detail, but so many details that you knew at the time and still here 30 years later, you still have access to all of that. You know, your love for your grandmother, you have some memories, but that strong connection and feeling isn't the same as you have with your guru. And,
Well, it's.
That you can recall that feeling so instantly, it just comes right back into your.
That's why there's so many discussions about the guru and how valuable the guru is, isn't it? It's all to do with that. It's the great step forward.
This is just a little bit of a babble, but sometimes I think to myself, all right, when you leave your body, when you're done with this journey, there will be Mother and David. Where will you go? Will you go to Mother or David? I'm going to Mother. I'm going to Mother, even though I'm still mourning the passing of David tremendously. But then I just say, oh, well, they're one and the same. I'll go to Mother and I'll be going to David too.
It'll be a team hug, Judy.
A group hug.
A group hug.
Well, you never know what heaven you're going to go to, because some of us have been in the causal plane before, and so we're brought right back to that. And you might only transition through that. So a lot of the experiences that people talk about in the, in near-death experiences and things like that have to do with the state that the person's getting to and the actual planets perhaps or the place where they're going to.
Don't tell Judy that. She wants to see David and Mother right away in the bodies, in the astral bodies. Don't disappoint her yet, Larry.
No, whatever God's will, that's what's going to happen, period.
I think there are things greater than the guru's body and the guru's presence. And so that's only, you know, it is.
You'll not be disappointed.
You won't be disappointed. That's, Don't we all think, well, those people will, when they die, then they'll know what's really going on. That'll teach them. That'll teach them, or won't they be surprised? But either way, we think we know what it's going to be like, and we just don't. And that's because the astral world is so large, and the causal world, there's many great, mothers had many great souls. So the idea that they could easily have gone into the, and there's probably one or two, and maybe David was one, who was an avatar. Or as Mother called them, avatarams. She discriminated or differentiated between a Krishna avatar incarnation or advent. There's another term that they use, isn't it? The advent.
Makes you want to remember which particular talk it was that David gave when he talked about the astral worlds in plural of don't look for me. Don't know where I'll be. You don't know where you're going. But just the description that he would give was definitely not anything that my thought process thought it was going to be. Needless to say, he blew my thoughts about astral world completely out of the water. Mm-hmm. Just my mind still can't wrap around what it could be.
Can I share a funny thing about the astral world? I asked David once, was I in his astral family? David, as he often would, didn't answer. And I said, I think I was your Labrador because I always just want to put my head in your lap like a big dog. And he said, yeah, that's good. That's good. He wasn't acknowledging that that was the case, but he wasn't not.
But he liked the image. He liked the thought of his head on his lap.
Of, the image of my puppy head on his knee.
Shall we read a little more?
Sure.
Maybe just a couple, like a page or so.
Yeah.
At a convenient place.
To get back to where I was, I closed the book here.
It's top of page 98.
98? Okay. Thank you, Larry. Is that right?
The first one, isn't that it?
No, I think it was.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Yeah, it has to be 98 correct. Because, you read all of the Wegats and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You can back up one paragraph if you want to.
Okay. And what is released is the consciousness which is released from each one of these bodily jars or these sheaths in which we live. This is quite an experience, and each experience is totally different. The first one is the most difficult because it has to do with these human senses and the fact that you've succumbed to temptation. It is not an easy thing to meet. One moment you are lifted up into the ecstasy of God and you're given tremendous revelations. The next moment you are taken down into the depths of your subconsciousness and are faced with all of the ignorance and darkness which you have lived throughout these million years, which it takes the brain to develop until it can realize its oneness with God. It starts out as a separate cell with a conscious knowledge of its separation from God and its knowledge of itself. Let me read that again. It starts out as a separate cell with a conscious knowledge of its separation from God and its knowledge of itself. I am. I can remember the time that happened to me many, many, many years ago. I think I was carrying my child Barbara in my womb at that time, and all of a sudden I was lifted up, and it was as though I was in space and all I could see was this purple mist. I was just a dewdrop floating in this mist, and yet I knew that I was, and I had separated myself from the spirit, but I wasn't really conscious of that. I was just really conscious. I am that little tiny dewdrop. Now from that, man develops through every one of the planes of consciousness until finally he reaches the state where he is about to become a human being. You have heard from the Darwinian theory. You have heard about the Darwinian theory. There was much conjecture about it in those days, about whether or not it was true, but they finally discarded it because they couldn't prove the missing link between the animal world and the human world. But God showed me in vision the reason why they couldn't prove it. When the animal reaches the state of consciousness, or the place where he is to be born a human being in the next incarnation, he dies in an animal form. He goes into the astral world, and then he is born for the first time in human form on the earth again. So the state of transition, or the missing link, cannot be proven scientifically on this plane, in this world, because it occurs on the astral plane. I remember that I was given such a tremendous vision, verifying this, and all of these things that we take to be myths, like the story of the centaur, half man, half horse, the story of the mermaid, half woman, half fish, are actually true because this is the state of transition from the animal or fish kingdom into the human kingdom. And I saw many of these forms, half animal, and they were different types of animal, and half man, half woman. First, you must pull the cork out of the gross or physical body, because this is the thing which is brought, was brought into manifestation last. So the first thing that you do is to release the consciousness from the physical or the gross body. Now with the gross body, it is the ego of the five senses, and this is very painful, a very difficult one. And the consciousness, when it is released from this particular body, undergoes many things. You're given many, many revelations. All of the outer influences gradually disappear, and then you go through the experience that the Christ went through when he crucified the Son of Man, or the human ego, on his own cross, which was the body, which was his body. He descended into the subconsciousness or the hell of his own being. You will remember that the Bible speaks very specifically and definitely of being in Hades for 3 days. On the morning of the third day, he arose from the dead. In other words, he died to the sense of separation, and he rose from the dead, or from that which was ignorant within himself. But this is a process which requires going through certain tests, certain spiritual experiences, all of which have a physical and a mental reaction on what you, on that, what you call the body. It's very interesting. It is a very difficult experience. Let us go to the story of Christ's ascension into hell. The first day he goes through whatever is necessary and his consciousness is released from the physical body. That doesn't mean that the physical body drops off. That doesn't mean that the physical body drops off, not at all. But he is made to move, and this is to loosen the atomic structure in order that the consciousness might be released from that particular body jar. When that happens, you go through this baptism of blood, because it means that the whole circulatory tract has to be transferred from the physical body to the psychic or the astral body. When you come out of that experience, you find that your heart and all of the functioning that was formerly on the left side of your body is now operating on the right. Your heart starts to beat there instead of on the left, which is the true meaning of what it says in Ecclesiastes. A fool's heart is on the left, a wise man's on his right. Because the soul, through releasing his consciousness from that physical body, has gained that much wisdom. He's gotten that much closer to the total release of his spirit from this prison, this bodily prison.
Let's call that good.
Mm-hmm.
We'll maybe read that one, that paragraph again next week.
Okay.
And then that'll finish up this chapter.
There's a little bit. There's one more paragraph, Larry, that's okay. Connected to
that's
that.
Connected. Go ahead. That's great.
Yeah. Thanks. The process is extremely painful. You can feel the blood surging in all of the circulatory tract of your body as each particular tract is tied off. As the change is completed within yourself, the navel is depressed or tied, because when the baby is born, the navel cord is tied to the mother's body. It is through this cord which the baby is fed while it is in her body. So afterwards, this being the blood and the nerve supply of the whole human body, when you go through this spiritual experience, also this happens within yourself. But then, even though you appear to all intents and purposes as living in this outer body, in truth, your consciousness resides in the more refined body within yourself.
So maybe we should talk about consciousness, shouldn't we? Because That's what she says is being released, and that's represented in the analogy with Master as the water that's there, the spirit. So what happens, I guess, is a way of explaining it, or the way the mother is explaining it, is that the consciousness is then able to join into the consciousness in the astral body, and then they can mix. And it does kind of make sense, because you know that we have memories of our lifetimes here on the physical plane. So it's interesting, too, that we have at death of the physical body, we go to the astral plane. Now, Mother said some people don't wake up. They stay asleep the whole time and come back into another life when one's arranged for. But as we gain consciousness, then we are awake in the astral plane and spend, you know, a lot of time in the astral plane and take more responsibility for what life is going, what circumstances for the next lifetime will be in the next life, and more planning is done and more help is given. So all limits or all aspects are different for each person. But consciousness is an interesting notion, isn't it? That it is
released.
Well, what is it? It is that truly part of us that witnesses and sees the world. But the world is coming from the other side. And this is why I wanted to do the holy science, because the chit is where you, the source of consciousness. And Ananda is the source of all of the physical realm, all phenomenology. It comes from the other side. So there's the knowledge of the world and the ability to understand it, and then the brute force of making the world, of creating the bricks and mortar of the even actually the astral and the physical bodies too.
So when you have thought, there's the separation. Thought creates the separation. Right, Larry?
You can also, thought is a derivative thing. It's not who you are, and it's not, it's symptomatic of things, right? It comes to you. It's not you.
But the pure awareness of God, if you do get a little flash, if you do, there's no thought.
I see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of thinking something fairly obvious maybe to everybody, but I guess I hadn't really thought this through, is that when they talk about the sea of consciousness and the cosmic sea, which is like this spatial thing, so that's again sea, and then Master talks about the water that's put in those jars as being the water from the sea. He doesn't say water from a tap or water from a lake. Mm-hmm. He says a sea water. Mm-hmm. And
It's universal.
It's universal, and it's also the symbol of consciousness then too, that the sea of consciousness. So that's, yeah.
And the jar that we're trapped in prevents us from merging.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's even more complicated than that, because there are psychics who can gain information from even from the people gone into the other world. Now, either some of these people are really highly realized, which is very possible, by the way. I know that a lot of them do it to make money, and we can make fun of all of that, but there are some very highly high souls involved in all of these kinds of worlds of astrology and psychic connections and what's the other thing? The Theosophical, so spiritualism, those kinds of things. They're not all bad. But we're warned against them, but they aren't wrong. They're only just wrong for us on the path that we are on. And we're trying to stay on the straight and narrow. But
where do dreams come in again, Larry? Like, can you?
Well, Mother said that dreams, and I think Master says this, dreams are astral, living in the astral world. They're coming from while your consciousness is in the astral plane, and then deep sleep is in the causal plane. So it's the opposite of what we think. You know, we think, well, gee, that's where you have the most consciousness. But it's so different from what we live here, because we're narrowed down into a very, very specific little sliver of reality here to be on this physical plane. So we're glad to rest. But sleeping itself is a very mysterious, and it must be for the consciousness. You know, because
David,
all the higher forms
David
do it.
David said it was being an unconscious yogi. Is the term he used.
Yeah, that's right. He did. Yeah. You mean for deep sleep?
Yeah, well, yeah. For asleep, when we're asleep, yeah. That we're unconscious yogis.
Right.
And that we want to bring that into our conscious living.
And interesting how when somebody dies, somebody say, well, he's gone to his eternal rest. So in that respect, it's the people that haven't, that aren't awaking into the astral or the causal world. They're just on that level where they are having eternal, or they're having not eternal rest, but a period of rest. And that's somehow supposed to be really a wonderful thing that he's gone off to his eternal rest. But,
you know, that music that I played last time and has that description.
In heavenly peace. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean the music on the Markandeya. You know, that he goes into the body of of the child.
Mm-hmm.
That there's this great rest is interesting, isn't it?
It's interesting because in that rest, he walked for 100 miles.
Yeah.
Within the body of the child while he was resting.
And then came back out, didn't he? Yeah, he came back out.
I hope you had a good rest.
Did you put that on the Cross and Lotus?
Oh, I said I was going to do that, didn't I? Yeah.
I love that. I love to listen
good.
To that.
Yeah.
I have a question about consciousness, what you were talking about, Larry. So
yeah, that's where we are. It's a mystery.
Could you clarify? Because what I come back to with the question, what is consciousness, is when Mother talks about being the dewdrop, because she says we start out as a separate cell with conscious knowledge of separation from God and knowledge of itself. I am. And then when she was a dewdrop, she says, I was just a dewdrop floating in the mist, and I knew that I was, and I had separated myself from the spirit, but I wasn't really conscious of that. I was just really conscious, I am, capital letters, that tiny dewdrop. So that consciousness, is that like a definition of consciousness would be I am? And
for
it's
sure,
what do we identify as that I? And with that I is an individual cell or a dewdrop or a human being. Separate.
Or a soul.
What's that? Mm-hmm.
Or a soul.
Or a soul. Any
so
soul,
before
any individuality.
Even before manifestation.
Even before manifestation, yeah. So is that I am. So what the consciousness is identifying itself as an I, and God realization would be conscious knowledge of the I am.
In universal.
With no separation. No, beyond individuality, that I am omnipresent I am.
It's more individual than any you can even imagine, actually, right? It's the only individual, and that's right. So it's not beyond individuality at that. If from what Mother is saying, I am that I am, which I am, that I am, the great I am. But the
It's still consciousness.
Yes,
there's still an I.
Yes, and well, and so
even
is the,
if it's the great.
It's still
I
consciousness,
am.
Even in the third body. We're wrapped in two other bodies. It's still consciousness, isn't it? But the dewdrop is really interesting because that is actually physical matter. So it's the most rudimentary thing there is practically in the living world. I mean, suns are full of just hydrogen all by itself with no electrons and maybe a little bit of helium. Mostly that's all it is, and plasma in between. But this physical world is very specific. It's, some things can only, you know, actually exist on this very thin skin.
When you say that, Larry, one thing that just came to me is, you know, that it's hydrogen alone and then the dewdrop as the first. Is it only when there's a two?
Well, I mean, it has to be a form you can exist in. So the hydrogen has to have that. The consciousness is still in the hydrogen too. But yeah. What Mother was trying to show was that this is life.
Yeah.
And you know, actually before life, because it's just water, a dewdrop. But it is the notion of, first of all, that I exist, and I'm just this little dewdrop. I mean, even the fact that it's just a dewdrop isn't known to you at that time. It is just, I'm completely aware of me being
me,
just this. And I'm just a bunch of water, a little tiny thing of water. And perhaps not even lived that long. That's the other mystery. We can have very short lifetimes, perhaps, and move from one to the other. It's beyond belief. Now, I wanted to say one thing, though, that... you know, when I was first with Mother, she used to not read, but she would mention Meher Baba all the time. Meher Baba says that humans are not part of the whole evolutionary thing. He has his own evolutionary scheme. I'm not saying he doesn't, but humans are discreetly different. Though Mother said there's an animal lifetime. When you gain the human incarnation, that's when you really become actualized, and you can, and there's all kinds of things that are different about you when you're human, because you are then, you can potentially have the divine spark manifest, you know, or completely, you know, you can feel the full divinity can be completely human and completely divine. But the animals, he says, are very much more regimented. There isn't like a continuous evolution or a reincarnational cycle with animals. It's a little mysterious in his book, God Speaks. He talks about all this. It is very difficult to understand, but he's mostly trying to say that human life is really, really special. It's just like the Christians have always said. And that, when this world was created, the only intended result was man. Now that's quite a statement. It's a fantastic statement. It really makes us, you know, really want to talk against suicide, perhaps, but we really want to admire, to understand at least the responsibility we have here.
And the fact
that fits with Mother's, that it happens in the astral plane too, wouldn't it? That transition.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. That's a good point. It does. Mm-hmm. Right.
Sorry, Judy.
I was just going to say that Mother said that we are God, mm-hmm. and we just need to realize this.
Yeah.
So when we become human, we have reached godhood in a way, but we haven't realized it. And we go astray, and then we have to come back and try to retrace our steps to who we really are as a human. Mm-hmm. Interesting, isn't it?
This is the fundamental error that we make as humans, to see God in an antiseptic corner of the universe, as Mother used to always say. To see him as a being, and even human or not, but a separate being. He's simply not. And the idea that we go up to God, that's all an inner experience. It's a sensation you have as you go up the spine. And people are so enthralled, saint stories, all those things going out of the body. It all has a vertical component because of the neurological structure that we have in our own bodies. But it all is within, and it's really mysterious.
Some of the discussion, especially, I just love that whole thing that Mother said about the little dewdrop is just amazing to me. But I just remember this quote that I liked a week or so ago from Mother, and I'm just going to go part way through. I mean, the latter part. Because I am his child. I am a part of him. I came out from God, and yet I have gone nowhere. I shall return to him, and yet I have been nowhere. Always I will be myself, the separate cell of his one body. And yet always I will know that I am the wholeness of him, the everlasting, the ever-loving, the most adorable Lord.
Where's that from, Kate?
Yeah, that's really wonderful.
That's one of the quotes that that was sent out by Rebecca. That was a quote from which date? Just a minute, I can find out which dates those were. Sometime January 29th to February 4th.
I got to read
you. It hasn't gone out yet, but it's going to go out.
That's why we haven't heard it yet.
Oh, yeah, I thought I would have remembered that.
I think I would have remembered that.
Okay.
But every time I think of course I did read it.
But it's, I've gone.
It was last Sunday.
Was it last Sunday? Gone out from him, but I have gone nowhere, you know. Yeah. I really love that one.
Oh, it was on the Sunday of the celebration.
Yeah.
Nineteen eighty-one.
And she said it. Okay.
Good to hear.
There's there's something very I don't know, essential and at the same time cosmic of thinking of that little tiny dewdrop and then it expanding into the vastness of everything and then going back into that little dewdrop. There's something just very transcendent about that, isn't there?
Yeah. And she shared that she was in space and could see just purple mist all around. And it makes me think that she was a particle of a nebula going to become stars, was stardust in between formation. And so truly part of the creation of the universe.
Witness to the creation, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be the Garden of Eden, too, is another image that comes to me. And the whole Garden of Eden is full of plants, and there's little leaves and little drops on each leaf.
Purple pollen.
But she did say purple mist. What was that?
And she did say pollen. If she's a teeny tiny cell in a dewdrop, right. She talks about it as a single cell. But if she's, how huge a puff of pollen might appear.
Well, and she said she was in space.
Yeah.
I was thinking that what Kate read about I know that I am that separate cell, and I know that I am the wholeness, when Mother said.
Yeah.
And in the reading, just after she finishes talking about the dewdrop, she says, now from that, man develops through every one of the planes of consciousness until finally he reaches the state where he is about to become a human being. So having gone through all these planes of consciousness, we have the consciousness of all that is contained within us. We have experienced all that, and now that is contained within our consciousness by the time we get to a human being. So Kira saying, Meher Baba saying that the human being is the ultimate, and when Judy said, when we get to the state of being a human being, we are gods. We have only yet to realize it. And we have that universal consciousness of all that has gone before, of all that we have been before, from atomic through mineral, vegetable, animal, spirit, astral forms, in between. All of that is contained within our consciousness already.
Well, we know that, certainly we do know that we contain, as an individual, memories of previous lifetimes. So that's continuous. That does stay with us. There's some continuity between lifetimes. And so that's compartmentalized, isn't it, in some sort, where it stays with you. And it does make sense that once you attain nirvana or, you know, sahaja samadhi, that you've now mixed your spirit with the, all the spirit of the universe. And so to go back into the body and recreate the body is fascinating to think that that could be done in maybe a limited time too. I always felt that Mother had to stay, she had to hug everybody to stay in the body. You know, because she said that she, it was hard on her nerves. And, you know, just telling this to some other people, I think at Mira's, that when we had Hot Fudge Sundays, when Mother told me one time that the reason she wants ice cream after a group, especially hugging people, but a group experience, is that it wears her down neurologically, and that the lecithin in ice cream is what she's craving. That's what she wants. She needs a little bit of repair of her neurological system.
And then probably the magnesium and the chocolate too.
But she didn't crave eggs. I mean, it was Hot Fudge Sunday.
They're cold. It's cool. It's also cooling.
It's funny, it wasn't
it's
broccoli.
The perfect, it's
perfect. Broccoli doesn't have lecithin. Eggs do.
Oh, but they do put, they used to put lecithin in ice cream for, mm-hmm. for solidifying it, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, Yeah, I remember one person who was a naturopath trying to tell Mother that if she just didn't eat her chocolate peanut butter cups, that maybe she would be healthy and be able to do. And you know, it's like, you don't understand. Like, this is it's not. Mother was so beyond what she.
It was funny.
Ate, you know?
We were watching that YouTube video about St. Clair. And here comes St. Francis in to say, you shouldn't treat your body so badly. You're not allowed. So he forbade her from, he made her eat. We were quite surprised. You know, here's the man who's the example she's following of abusing his body. Of course, I'm sure he wouldn't ever say that he was abusing the body intentionally, but he was just, I think, you know, in India, there's a term called avadhut. So A-V-A-D-H-O-O-T, as you see it spelled sometimes. And these are really, truly great masters, maybe fully realized masters, who just in their own reasons for manifesting have no interest in the body at all. And that's where they can walk around naked. They have no consciousness that they're in the body except just to keep a toehold in. And so and Mother talks about that experience. She's had those kinds of experiences too. But I forget where I was going with that. But anyway.
I was thinking about you mentioning David on Seahome Hill, Peter, and wanting to hug the rocks and earth, you know, and it connected to that idea of Mother being that dewdrop, that particle of something, maybe a star nursery or something, and having experienced then every incarnation as some life form and or matter and then when you open up your heart center, it's all there and that love that is everything is all there and you are aware of the connection, the oneness that it is you, it is your very self. And how could you not want to just hug every part of material universe and the air and the sun and everything, you know?
And that's brother, son, sister, moon. That's St. Francis's kind of thing too, isn't it? And Papa had that experience. Yeah. Breaks down all the barriers between you and the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Tree huggers, all of us. Even you, Peter.
You know, David and I were traveling up in BC, and there was a truck in front of us, and we went and looked for this bumper sticker. Couldn't find it. We asked him where he got it, and it said, "Hug a logger, you'll never go back to trees."
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting late, so let's... The bookend to Mother's prayers always being part of this. Mm. Our closing prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
I surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
My communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace.
Bless.
Amen.
Amen.